This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. More than 190,000 people have lost their lives globally from the COVID-19 pandemic as the number of infections reached 2.7 million and more. The United States by far has the highest number of deaths and infections at about almost 50,000 deaths and 880,000 infections. U.S. unemployment is swelling to levels last seen during the Great Depression, with one in six American workers thrown out of work by the coronavirus. The government says more than 4.4 million laid-off workers applied for unemployment benefits last week. With jobless lines growing, the House passed a nearly $500 billion infusion of coronavirus spending to aid ailing businesses and hospitals. In all, about 26 million people have now filed for unemployment aid in the past 5 weeks. That's more than the 10 biggest U.S. cities combined. President Donald Trump said the bill will help small businesses keep millions of workers on the payroll. U.S. President Trump on Thursday said that the researchers should try to apply their findings to coronavirus patients by inserting ultraviolet light or disinfectant into their bodies. He said, is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? It would be interesting to check that. A U.S. official said at a White House news briefing that the novel coronavirus appears to weaken more quickly when exposed to sunlight, heat, and humidity, and a potential sign that the pandemic could become less contagious in summer months. U.S. government researchers have determined the virus survives best indoors and in dry conditions and loses potency when temperatures and humidity rise. This is VOA News. California Governor Gavin Newsom announced Wednesday was the deadliest day the state has faced since the COVID-19 outbreak began. The news prompted the governor to plead for continued social distancing as Californians trickle back to local beaches under the lure of warm weather. He is quoted as saying 115 human beings lost their lives, families torn apart. It was the deadliest day in state of California. I don't say that lightly. I don't say that certainly, cheerfully. I don't say that except in any way, shape, or form to do justice to those individuals. Newsom has been credited with taking early action to lock down the state, which has seen fewer cases than New York and other East Coast states. But with warmer weather on the horizon, Newsom warned Californians not to let their guard down. Canada's worst mass shooting started as a domestic dispute between the gunman and his girlfriend, who survived the attack. That's according to a police official late Thursday. The official confirmed to the Associated Press that the weekend rampage in Nova Scotia erupted after an argument between the pair. The official, who spoke on condition of anonymity, said more details would be provided at a news conference Friday. Police have said that 51-year-old Gabriel Wortman acted alone in waging a shooting spree that killed at least 22 people across northern and central Nova Scotia. There are 16 crime scenes in five different rural communities throughout northern and central Nova Scotia. The suspect was shot to death Sunday morning, about 13 hours after the attacks began. Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden is calling on Congress to provide enough money for every state to allow voters to cast a ballot, a mail ballot, this November amid the coronavirus pandemic. He told donors during an online fundraiser Thursday that we have to make it easier for everybody to be able to vote, particularly if we're still basically in the kind of lockdown circumstances we're in now. Biden also blasted President Trump for criticizing mail voting and not supporting aid for the Postal Service. Biden called it un-American and suggested that President Trump is trying to undermine the November election. An Italian cruise ship docked in a southern Japanese port city of Nagasaki had 43 more new cases in an outbreak that erupted this week, bringing the total infected to 91, according to local officials. The outbreak on the Costa Atlantica surfaced Tuesday when officials from Nagasaki and Mitsubishi Heavy Industry, which is the in charge of repairs and maintenance of the ship, announced that a crew member developed a cough and a fever. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Today is Friday, April 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenyan health workers threaten strike over COVID-19 risk allowances.
Within 7 days, if this issue have not been addressed, we shall be back here announcing a nationwide strike. We will no longer sit back and watch one cutter enjoy the privileges that are there in Kenya for health workers.
Malawi health workers face stigma and discrimination over COVID-19. A Zambian civil society group wants the minister fired for beating alleged COVID-19 guidelines violators. As coronavirus hits European economies, remittances plummet. And the coronavirus pandemic overshadows World Malaria Day tomorrow, Saturday, in Africa.
COVID will affect our flow of resources, both human, financial, and other, and that may draw back some of the gains that have been brought in malaria control.
And gender-based violence on the increase in Zimbabwe during COVID-19 lockdown. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's post, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Society has issued a 7-day industrial strike notice if the government of Kenya does not fulfill their demands dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. The frontline health workers say government should give them risk and commuter allowances, among other issues. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, Kenyan health workers have been complaining about the lack of personal protective equipment while dealing with COVID-19 patients.
The government of Kenya will be in trouble to curb the deadly COVID-19 pandemic if the 7-day strike notice issued by the Kenya Health Professional Society will be implemented once the notice elapses. This is following a complaint from health workers who say their life is in danger while dealing with the COVID-19 patients. The Secretary General, Kenya National Union of Nurses, Seth Panyako, has threatened to have nurses down their tools as from Thursday next week if the government will not adhere to their demands.
Frontline health workers must be put on medical insurance, or what we call life insurance. There is no debate about that. Within 7 days, if this issue have not been addressed, we shall be back here announcing a nationwide strike. We will no longer sit back and watch one cutter enjoy the privileges that are there in Kenya for labor movement, for health workers, when other workers are suffering. If we are not going to be engaged by the government, we will engage them in the road they know. We will come here, we shall announce a major industrial action that they have never seen before.
According to a survey conducted by the union between 4th and 6th April 2020, most of health workers are getting challenges with transport and are also afraid of transmitting the virus to their family without their knowledge. The Secretary General, Kenya National Union of Clinical Officers, George Gibore, said that most of their health officers are being harassed by the police during curfew time.
You cannot award somebody in third line defense of health a higher risk than any other person. The government has not provided any transport for these health workers, including this time of curfew, which have resulted to police robbing and actually mishandling our professionals. We have several of them who have already been arrested and been put for mandatory quarantine, which should not happen despite them having curfew pass. This must stop.
The health society wants health workers trained, especially those on frontline, to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. The chairperson, Kenya Health Professional Society, Mohamed Duba, said that the government may not win the war against COVID-19 if it does not take into consideration the health workers' affairs.
There must be equity in this country, equity in the health sector. For a very, very long time, there has been inequity in the health sector. These cadres who are here today, there are 18 health professional bodies that constitute 80% of public health sector. And these are the people who have been ignored for long. There has been discrimination in the health sector. One cadre is favored. This nation is the time for this nation to come together as one. But in the health sector, we are even being divided at this critical point in time.
If the threats by healthcare workers to go on strike will be implemented, Kenyans will be at high risk of contracting the COVID-19, as some will succumb to other illnesses. Already, the number of COVID-19 positive cases in Kenya are at 320 and 87 recoveries as per yesterday, Thursday. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jumbo in Nairobi, Kenya.
While health workers fighting the coronavirus around the world have been cheered in public, those in Malawi say they face insults, stigma, and discrimination. Malawi so far has confirmed 33 cases of COVID-19 and 3 deaths, but health workers say they are shunned in public, refused access to public transport, and even evicted from their rented houses because they are assumed to have the virus. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The mayor of Malawi's capital, Lilongwe, recently condemned the practice of shunning healthcare workers for fears they have COVID-19. Juliana Kaduya asked members of the public to appreciate what these workers are doing in saving the lives of coronavirus patients. But a nurse at Kamuzu Central Hospital in Lilongwe, who refused to be named for fear of reprisals, told VOA Thursday the abuse continues. We will call her Annie Banda. Banda said in a telephone interview that some passengers blocked her as she tried to climb aboard a minibus on her way to work Tuesday. She says, when I was boarding a minibus, a female passenger charged at me saying, "These are the ones who are carrying Ebola," instead of saying coronavirus, and they should not come in here. Banda said the confrontation forced her to take a taxi to work. The National Organization for Nurses and Midwives of Malawi says it has received several complaints and video clips about minibus operators not allowing nurses to board their vehicles. Its president, Charles Smeza, spoke to VOA.
Even some landlords, you know, have vacated our colleagues and health workers that are renting out their houses to say, "No, you can't be in my house. You guys are infected, so you infect my house." You know, we've received those grievances and we've declined. You know, it's unfair.
Last week, a local online publication ran a story about communities in southern Malawi threatening to evict or kill a health worker who handled a patient later found to be positive for COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. They feared the health worker was also infected and as a result would infect the whole area. Smeza says some health facilities have responded to the complaints by arranging special vehicles to transport their medical staff. Health workers like Banda have resolved to put on civilian gear whenever they travel by public transport. She says, "We are now carrying our uniforms in the bags. You can't see a nurse boarding a minibus in uniform. You even can't see a nurse walking in public in uniform to catch a bus." Health Ministry spokesperson Joshua Malango declined to comment on the matter Thursday, saying the ministry has yet to receive official complaints from health workers. In the meantime, health workers in Malawi's public hospitals are holding sit-ins aimed at pushing the government to give them personal protective equipment, a move they believe will also help reduce suspicion that they are carriers of COVID-19. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
In Zambia, a civil society group is calling on President Edgar Lungu to immediately fire Minister for Lusaka Province, Brown Lusambo. The civil society constitutional agenda accuses the minister of abusing the rights of citizens under the guise of enforcing guidelines to halt the spread of the coronavirus. The demands come after local media compiled evidence of the minister beating citizens who, he said, failed to comply with government health guidelines. Malawi has confirmed 74 COVID-19 cases so far, with 3 deaths and 55 recoveries. Judith Mulenga, vice chairperson for the Civil Society Constitutional Agenda, tells viewers Peter Clotty that President Lungu's failure to fire the Lusaka province minister would violate the constitution.
"We are displeased as the civil society constitutional agenda. Our role is to ensure that Zambia is not only respecting human rights, but that our constitution is adhered to. And our Bill of Rights prohibits the corporal punishment of individuals as being inhuman and degrading treatment or punishment. And this is what the minister has been doing. He claims he's doing it in order to protect our lives vis-a-vis the COVID-19. But we insist that human rights are indivisible, interrelated, and interdependent. So therefore, you cannot violate one human right at the same time stating that by violating this human right, then I'm protecting another human right. That's unacceptable.
In your press release, your group is saying both the minister and by extension the president are violating the very essence of the Constitution. Some are suggesting that perhaps the president should fire the minister. Is that your stance as well?
Yes, definitely. The president, in order to retain his authority, he needs to fire this man. This man has violated human rights. Initially, he slapped another MP whom he didn't agree with on the grounds of parliament. And when he was chastised, he refused to apologize because he said he was doing it to protect the name of the president. The Constitution, our Constitution, gives our president the executive authority to exercise executive functions either by himself or by his appointees. So he is the one who appointed this man to be a minister. So he should relieve him of his duties because this man is violating human rights. He doesn't have any respect, any regard. He went on TV and boasted that the law he was using was himself, which is total anarchy. So yes, we are demanding that he should actually fire this man because he's not of value to us. He's only of value to the appointing authority.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 24th. A new World Bank study predicts remittances sent home by migrant workers from low- and middle-income countries may plummet by one-fifth this year, prompted by the coronavirus-driven global economic downturn in Europe that translates into billions of dollars lost to families in Africa, the Middle East, and elsewhere. Lisa Bryant takes a look at the fallout from Paris, France.
Almost every business is shuttered on what is normally a bustling street, except for the Western Union money transfer office. Even so, it's seeing only a trickle of customers. Retiree Boubaka Baka is sending his usual quarterly payment back to his family in Abidjan. He says it's not much, times are tight, but he says his family has to eat. With its many African residents, especially from Mali, Moultrie is sometimes called Little Bamako. On this day, I met Western Union customer Sidi Diabate, who is indeed from Mali. Diabate is sending a small sum to family in Western Mali as a Ramadan gift. He says he's an office clerk here and his job is secure. But he says times are tough in his homeland, where the coronavirus has also arrived. With Mali's borders closed to slow the pandemic, he says people lack basics like sugar. France is one of Europe's biggest exporters of migrant worker remittances. The African diaspora here, estimated at 3.6 million people, sent more than $10 billion home in 2017. But coronavirus-triggered layoffs and lost wages are affecting those transfers. Staff at the Moultrie Western Union declined to be interviewed for radio, but said their clientele has dropped sharply in recent weeks. There are other reasons for the slowdown in remittances. One is that a number of money transfer offices are closed under the current shutdown. Companies like Western Union have launched communications campaigns urging clients to send payments via internet or phone app. But not everybody has a computer or smartphone.
Pour certains aussi d'en recevoir, parce que la solidarité, elle marche parfois dans les deux sens. On a tendance à oublier, mais quelqu'un...
Laurent Roussier, mayor of the nearby town of Saint-Denis, where about a third of the population is foreign-born, says some remittances are going the other way as well. He says migrant workers who have lost their jobs here are getting money from families back home. The World Bank forecasts Africa alone could lose more than $11 billion in remittances from its diaspora this year, even as experts fear foreign investment and aid could also drop. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Montreuil, France.
The coronavirus pandemic is overshadowing this year's World Malaria Day, April 25th, in Africa, despite malaria's much higher death toll across the continent. The World Health Organization says more than 380,000 Africans died from malaria in 2018, 94% of the world's total. In contrast, Africa has so far confirmed about 1,200 deaths from the spreading coronavirus. Health experts worry the focus on COVID-19 could roll back progress against malaria. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi.
World Malaria Day comes at a time when Africa is struggling to make further progress against the mosquito-borne disease, but also as the coronavirus pandemic threatens the continent's weak healthcare system. The World Health Organization says Africa accounts for 94% of global malaria deaths, and between 2000 and 2014, malaria-related deaths fell by 40%. But according to the World Health Organization's World Malaria Report 2019, there have been few gains in reducing malaria infections and fatalities since. Dr. Francis Kimani is with the Kenya Medical Research Institute. He says with the outbreak of COVID-19 in Africa, gains made against malaria could even be reversed.
COVID will affect our flow of resources, both human, financial, and all that. And that may draw back the some of the gains that have been brought in malaria control, especially now that you're going into our malaria season with the long rains in and the peak season coming up. If resources are diverted to COVID and other issues, if the population is not able to access healthcare promptly, if the supplies, drugs, and malaria testing kits don't get to the facilities in good time, then obviously we expect that there might be some reversal in terms of the gains that have been gotten in malaria control.
Further complicating the fight against malaria, some symptoms such as high fever are similar to the coronavirus. The London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine's Professor Colin Sutherland says that could also undermine progress against malaria. He spoke from London via a messaging application.
Any person with respiratory symptoms and a fever will, of course, be suspected of having COVID anyway and will be treated as a potential COVID patient. So there is a danger, of course, that malaria will be missed and not treated in that case.
Despite the challenge to fighting malaria from the coronavirus, there is hope for making bigger gains against the parasitic disease. Africa has been rolling out a promising malaria vaccine that the World Health Organization says is effective in young children. Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi in 2019 introduced the RTSS vaccine targeting around 360,000 children annually. Dr. Kwaku Asante is the lead scientist for the Ghana Malaria Vaccine Pilot. He spoke from Accra via a messaging application.
The latest on the RTSS Malaria Vaccine Pilot is very exciting. We have realized that uptake of the first dose of the malaria vaccine is about 70% in the areas where the vaccine is being conducted, and the evaluations are also going on very well.
The program will run through 2022 as scientists study the effectiveness of the malaria vaccine for wider use in Africa. Medical researchers are scrambling to develop a vaccine for the highly infectious coronavirus that they hope to have ready next year at the earliest. Meanwhile, some anti-malarial drugs have been touted as a possible treatment or even cure for coronavirus. U.S. President Donald Trump has promoted the use of hydroxychloroquine as a possible game changer against COVID-19. Medical experts like World Health Organization Kenya representative Rudolf Eggers have cautioned that the effectiveness of such drugs against the coronavirus is not clear.
There have been some small studies done that show that chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine may be effective against this COVID disease, but in fact it's not proven yet. The evidence for this is actually quite unclear. So as we are at the moment, we actually cannot make a definite statement that the antimalarials are actually beneficial in the treatment of this disease.
A U.S. government study released this week also suggested the use of hydroxychloroquine might be linked to higher death rates. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Kenya, where Kenyan national football team Harambee Stars' chances of participating in the 2022 FIFA World Cup qualifiers could be over after the deadline for Football Kenya Federation to pay former coach Adel Amrushi over $1 million passed without meeting that obligation. Kenya's fate now lies in the hands of Amrushi and the FIFA's disciplinary committee as the nation awaits with bated breath for a final decision from the Switzerland-based body. And on to Nigeria, where Nigeria's Super Eagles player Ahmed Musa has dismissed claims on social media that he had tested positive for coronavirus. Ahmed Musa, who plays for Al Nassr Football Club in Saudi Arabia, described the rumor as fake news on his verified Twitter handle. The Nigerian international also advised Nigerians to avoid fake news. And on to North Africa, where the Egyptian Football Association announced Thursday that the suspension of all football activities in Egypt could be extended for 15 more days as the country continues fighting the spread of coronavirus. EFA has decided to extend the suspension of football activities starting from the beginning of May for another 15 days. The suspension of football activities started on the 15th of March, initially for 2 weeks in aid of stopping the spread of the coronavirus outbreak. Egyptian football clubs had already halted training, asking players to stay fit at home until further notice. Staying with Egypt, Egyptian giant Al Ahly have declared that their players will not take pay cuts in the next 4 months, despite the suspension of all competitions on the back of the coronavirus spread. A number of Egyptian Premier League clubs have slashed their players' wages, including Arab Contractors and Etihad of Alexandria, amid calls for an initiative to mitigate the pandemic impact on the sports landscape. Al Ahly's board believes the Cairo club can shoulder the pressure, at least on the short term. And now to South Africa, where professional sports events remain prohibited in South Africa. President Cyril Ramaphosa said, announcing a phased reopening of the economy from the national lockdown on Thursday night. Sports might have received a glimmer of hope of a resumption of play from the relaxing of lockdown regulations, though any action on the field appears to remain unlikely within the coming month. And finally, Ghanaian professional boxer and former IBF lightweight title holder Richard Tommy is keen on reclaiming his IBF lightweight title he lost in December 2019. The boxer, who lost his title to 22-year-old Honduran Teofimo Andres Lopez Rivera in December, says he is preparing himself to take his title back once the coronavirus pandemic is over and sporting events can resume. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, April 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.